Wednesday afternoon. Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell, and Bruce with us for Sports Lit 101. And a friend of our show, Jack Gilden, has got a brand new book out. You talked about it a little bit last week, but sounds like it's pretty good.
Yeah. It's as good and maybe better than Collision of Wills.
Wow.
This is... it starts with a premise that is remarkable, and that is that we did not know at the time why Spectacular Bid lost to Belmont. No, it was not gangsters. No, it was not some threat. But it was a combination of things, including one thing, which I'm going to let Jack, when we talk to him, really go into in detail. But the way the book is set up, Spectacular Bid may have been as great a horse as Secretariat. There are many people that believe that. Jockeys who rode against both of them or rode on one or the other of them. And Bid was a Baltimore area horse, a Maryland horse, and it was trained by a guy named Buddy Delp. And Buddy Delp was not someone that I guess I could say I have much respect for. He did, however, take under his wing, and eventually being under his wing was not a good thing, a young boy named Ronnie Franklin. Ronnie Franklin was a tiny, wiry kid from Dundalk, which is a working class section of Baltimore. And the horse was owned by the Meyeroffs, by Harry, who had a lot of money. And he liked to party. And Buddy Delp liked to party. And eventually, Buddy Delp's son, who was Ronnie Franklin's best friend, and Ronnie got into substances they should not have gotten into. And Ronnie Franklin was a really good jockey. He was the apprentice jockey of the year, and he rode a Spectacular Bid to wins in the Derby and the Preakness when he was 19 years old. Everybody figured he's going to ride in the Belmont. But because Buddy Delp could also be a less than pleasant and a calculating kind of guy, he sort of put out that maybe Shoemaker might be available. He might be a good guy to have ride. And in the end, they have Ronnie ride. As people know, Coastal came from the inside and beat Spectacular Bid. Now, Ronnie Franklin gets all the blame at the time by from turf riders and from all these other people, except Jacinto Vasquez, the jockey, says, oh, no, he got bad instructions. He was told to just burst out of the gate and just outrun everybody. Now, people may not all know this, but the Belmont is the longest of the three races. It's a mile and a half. And many a great horse has won the first two legs of the Triple Crown, but hasn't had the strength to get to the end. But the Bid should have had that. However, there was another fellow that plays into this, and he was a veterinarian. I'm not gonna name his name. I'll let Jack talk about him. But this veterinarian was also known as a chemist, if you will. And what was ailing Spectacular Bid that morning, it would have been the right thing to do to just withdraw the horse. It was not a life-threatening or career-threatening situation, but he shouldn't have run that day. But this doctor could make him run, and the jockeys noticed that this normal, calm horse, who would sometimes nip at the lead horse, but seemed to be shiny and wet and not himself. There had been lots of bad blood between Angel Cordero Jr. and Ronnie Franklin. That was due in part, that many of the Hispanic jockeys, with some reason, didn't like Steve Cawthon and they didn't like Ronnie Franklin. They felt because they were Anglos that they got to go to the head of the line, maybe only because of that. That maybe yes, maybe no. I didn't see, or does Gilden have any precise reason for them to believe that? But it led to a lot of tension. And it led at one point to Cordero and Franklin having some bumping matches and some troubles with each other in various races, which resulted in both a fist fight and it resulted in Franklin using a slur he never should have used against Cordero. Not that Cordero wasn't saying absolutely the same kinds of things about people, but he was smart enough not to get it out in the press to everybody. So going into the Belmont that year, the stakes are not only very high because the thought was that if bid wins, then the syndicated fees will be $45 to $46 million. As trainer, Buddy Delp would have got 10% of that. So did they keep the horse in the race hoping that they'd get lucky, or, you know, were they just foolish? Because without that, the money, that the stud fees would have gone way down, or people would not have bought the horse for use as a stud for that same kind of money. What's amazing in Gildon's research is we now know why all this stuff happened. And he realized that a lot of the people were dying or were going to die when he started the research on the book. He went after it. Some people would talk to him, some people wouldn't. The beauty is Buddy Delp's son, Gerald, did talk to him. And he was Ronnie Franklin's best friend and his running partner and the guy that got into all this cocaine trouble, the two of them. Buddy, of course, saying he didn't know that these young boys were doing cocaine. He was not only providing it, he was using Ronnie Franklin's earnings to buy so much cocaine that they had it in flour sacks. Now,
wow.
We know how decadent the 70s were. I mean, I was playing music then. There wasn't a bar in America which if you really were willing to be stupid and you wanted to buy one of the dumbest drugs you can do, as Elvin Bishop said, don't do heroin, it'll kill you. Don't do cocaine, you always run out. What did Robin Williams say? It's God's way of saying you have too much money.
Mm.
But their money was flowing in, big, huge money. And the horse's owner was sort of an old hippie who liked to get stoned and drink all day. And as long as his horse was doing well and he wasn't getting any real trouble, he was letting the trainer pretty much do what he wanted to do. The problem was nobody was looking after Ronnie Franklin. And he had left home at 15 to live with Buddy Delp, or and then another time to live in another part of Virginia to learn to be a jockey. And there was really nobody looking out for him. And he didn't have a skill set. He wasn't mature enough to be in a situation. He was then suddenly 19 years old. He's got women chasing him left and right. He has unlimited access to drugs. He's living in a big, beautiful house with, you know, pool tables and TVs and pools and all these kinds of things. And he ends up in a very tragic situation where he spirals downward. His career after another year on the bid becomes erratic. He gets replaced. He starts racing in all these other small tracks and the like, and just tries rehab. And suddenly, you know, he's not one of those guys that can make it. He didn't have the kind of support behind him. But all these people and many other people and Gildon builds everything up. The book does not end the day of Belmont, but he builds everything up to it so that when you get there and you find out what actually happened, you sort of go, you take a deep breath and you realize that all of this could have been so easily avoided. It's and the writing, I'm telling you, the writing is as good as anything I've read, any nonfiction book I've read in a long, long time. It's really, really
good. I was trying to think, this is what, late 70s?
Yeah. 78 or 79, now I forget. 78, I think. I should know this because I just finished reading this book, but I'm so wiped from all this travel that my brain is somewhere else. Yes, I believe we are talking about 1978. And he began researching this book a long time ago, and I was going to try and say when it was that when he started this book, I forget. But anyway, it was 78 or 79. I apologize for 1979. What's 1979?
I just found it. Yep.
And you know, when people think about what's going on in American culture at that time, you've got disco and the whole glorification of ecstasy and cocaine and all these other kind of drugs. You've got rock music being just infiltrated with it. I mean, people who were not around that may not understand just how available it was and how many lives it ruined.
Yeah. Radio. I mean, I miss this. Not that I would have partaken anyway, but record companies would routinely deliver deliver cocaine to jocks in exchange for playing records. It was the new version of payola.
Well, when I was playing music, I if I had a dollar for every time this happened, I'd be a wealthy man. Someone would say to me, hey, you want to come out the car and do a line? I'd say no. I mean, I've seen enough movies to know that's not a good idea, right? Mm. Even if I wanted to, I'd say no. And they go, what, are you like too good to do a line with me? And it's like, no, I have a gig to play, and then I have a, and I got to drive home. Dude, you'll be like wide awake for the ride. Trust me. And it was like, it was just, it was an insult to not go along. And that seems to be what was going on in Ronnie Franklin's world, that it was always there. Everybody was doing it. Not when he was racing, but after the race, after, yeah, you know, riding five mounts and out of maybe eight races or whatever a card would be for the day. He's a very tragic figure. He's a guy. It's very easy to say, if you had been like Stevie Cawthon, who stayed away from all that stuff and became, you know, and Cawthon became the hero. He was, yeah, the, you know, he was the non-Hispanic, was the great white hope, if you will, among jockeys. And there was a lot of resentment about that too. But,
well, and Spectacular Bid was a tragic figure too. Not a, what, six, seven years, all Spectacular Bid made it. Died young.
Yeah, did die young at stud, and but the thing is, people forget that after the Belmont, I think the number, he won more than 10 stakes races after that, and probably healthy, wins that Triple Crown and goes down to be, you know, I mean, I think it was who beat, was it Affirm that beat Aladar 3 years,
yes,
in every three race, all three races, right? Mm. Came in second in all three races. Coming in second in the Belmont is not, I mean, that's not a bad thing, right?
No, no.
But only a bad thing if you've come in first in, right, in the other two. And you learn so much about the dynamics of the tracks and the different racing associations. And New York Racing Authority clearly did not like Buddy Delph and did not like the Meyerhoffs. A lot of thought that that had to do with anti-Semitism. Gildon, who would be particularly sensitive to that, having won the Simon Rock Hour for best Jewish journalism, and he's very, 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 he's written about anti-Semitism in sports before. He, you know, he sort of looked into that, and it doesn't say here, yeah, that's what happened, but it's like pretty hard to think it wasn't the case. It's a really, really good book. You're gonna love this.
Well, I look forward to reading it, and we'll talk with Jack Gildon down the road.
Yeah, we don't have an exact date yet. It is possible it could be the 15th, but we don't have a date yet.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, Bruce.
You, my pleasure.